It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running with a brand new broadcast week on the horn. It is the 6th day of May, 2019. This is the horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. And that, of course, is the easiest way to go about getting the stream. Although the live stream is also available on a number of other platforms. And heck, the so-called podcast, you can get that at Stitcher and Tune In and Golly Moses, Roku devices, and Spotify. Wow, it's everywhere, I tell you. Everywhere. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the first full week of May for 2019. And what a lovely beginning of the week we had after a nice, soaking, sodden weekend. Be nice to get one of those nice weekend, one of those sunny, beautiful, a couple of those on a Saturday and Sunday sometime soon. Makes it a little bit easier to go out and do chores and whatnot. But we begin every broadcast here at the Horn with gratitude, with thanks. And thanks go out over the weekend to Jute in the Great Northwest. Thank you also to Kitty in Boston. Thank you to Don in West Tennessee. Thank you to Bob. Thank you to Alex and Kim. Thank you to Chris in Germany. Thank you to James in Illinois. Roberto, thank you. Kenda, thank you in Missouri. Thank you to Roland and Edward. Thank you to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Yes, thank you one and all. Thank you to Nagla and to Paul, to Thomas, to Catherine, and to Kelly. Thank you. Those are our subscribers over the weekend. Thank you so very much indeed. Thanks also going out to Joy in Ann Arbor for getting us started early today. So where does that take it? Well, we've got a $340 fundraising goal because we pulled up $165 short, but Joy got us started today. So that leaves 340. 10 at 34, 34 people at $10 a piece. 34 brand new subscribers at Patreon or PayPal. Wouldn't that be awesome? Yes, as a matter of fact, it would be. But anyway we can raise it, because that's how we keep the bills paid around here. That's how this program continues, on the determination and the grit and the goodwill of the community that has formed around this program over more than a decade and a half. Mm-hmm. So just run over to HeadOn.live, click on the Contribute tab. If you want to become a new subscriber, we'd love to have you. Tick the little box that says make this happen at the same time every month, and away you go. Or do a one-off, whatever. It really, whatever works best for you. Any program notes this week? No, not that I can think of. I've got some various doctor appointments I'm running folks to this week, but I don't think any of them are going to take out the program or anything. So everything should be as close to normal as normal can be here with this little program. How about that? Sorry about that. White Rose Society crashed there for a minute or two, but we should be okay now. Thanks for letting me know, Brother Deacon Asa. I do appreciate it. That's odd. Well, HeadOn.live was cruising along, but for some reason or another, it's working. It's working. It's good. It's working. And that's a happy thing. So it is the beginning of the week, and the week begins with what? Yeah. Morans. Lots and lots of morans. Oh, by the way, if you'd like to wander by the chat room, that's also at headon.live. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be capably moderated by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Irish Dave's already there. So's Jimmy. So's Otto and Rhonda and Squeaky. And add your voice, or your typed characters, I guess I should say, to the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place when this program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Yeah, it was a beautiful Appalachian spring day today. Berg went out and did some mowing, and it needed it because, well, this is that time of the year where in Appalachia, a good rainy week will, and when it finally dries out, you look up and you go, hey, the grass is up to my navel. Yeah. So, like I said, it's Monday, and that means morans. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed it does.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas awaiting you is the full panoply of moranity here in the United States of America. We've got them all. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, booger eaters, maggots, trumpansies, libertarians, republicans, one and all, as well as occasional side forays into morans who are not part of those genuses and species. Yes, indeed. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. That's right. The Moran Monday tent comes to your town each and every Monday, along just a few steps off the Carnival Midway. Thanks to people who are willing to shell out not quite 45 cents per program. Yes, indeed. That's what our subscribers are into. $10 a month gets you less. It costs less than 15 cents an hour to support the program that way. And, there's no end, really. There's no end to the moranity. Just moments ago, you were standing there on the Carnival Midway, heaving ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, desperate to win so you could take pride of place back in your neighborhood. A little baby iguana that will grow to the size of a Volkswagen microbus and someday eat the entire neighborhood. But now you stand before the Moran Monday tent flap, ready to enter. A general warning as you go in, keep a close hand on wallets, purses, watches, belts, pocket watches, keychains, children, small animals, and yes, even the iguana you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls. Because, well, the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. And you will. We have a breaking news moran to begin the program this evening. That's the world we live in now.
Things tend to happen between the hours of 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That's where we are now, daylight time. And they have to be dealt with as they arise. In this case, our lead Moran is none other than Steve Moran Mnuchin. Steve, being the treasurer of the United States of America, has certain obligations, legal ones, but Steve Mnuchin, who is not an all-around great guy, has decided to say, fuck the law, fuck the Constitution, fuck the separation of powers real hard. I'm Steve Mnuchin. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about the fact that as of now, it's not like it wasn't expected, but as of now, Steve Mnuchin, who as Secretary of the Treasury oversees the Internal Revenue Service, has decided that an elected member of Congress, specifically empowered to do so, may not see the tax returns of Donald J. Trump. Again, even though there's a statute, a portion of the U.S. Code, that says he has the absolute right to request the 1040, or whatever form it is, of any citizen of the United States. Richard Neal is that person. He chairs the House's Ways and Means Committee. Again, specifically empowered by law. Because that law says when he requests it, the IRS shall furnish those returns. Not may, not if they feel like it. Not unless Steve Mnuchin says so, unless it causes the nitwit Nero to throw a hissy fit. None of that's in there. Shall furnish those tax returns. Okay? Steve Mnuchin has declared that the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee's request, quote, lacks a legitimate legislative purpose. Really? Lacks a legitimate legislative purpose. Can you think of a legitimate legislative purpose? I can think of several. One, did he even file them? Two, did he in fact engage in criminal activities in trying to dummy up his finances so he could buy the Buffalo Bills? Really, the Bills. Yeah. And that's just a couple. Then there's the other legitimate legislative purpose, the fact that the House and the Senate, comprising the Congress of the United States, that Article I branch of government, is tasked with performing oversight on the other two branches of government. So that, for instance, let's say maybe that the Congress, exercising its constitutional oversight duties, would like to know if the President of the United States, in violation of one of the more clear-cut prohibitions in the Constitution, is unconstitutionally profiting from emoluments. The Emoluments Clause? Yes, of course. Nope. Nope, nope, nope. Steve Mnuchin looked at all those things, and there's a lawyer somewhere in the United States government who agreed to do as he or she was told. Just a little reminder. Do you remember way, way, way back in the waning days of the reign of error of dim leader George W. Bush, who was basically just a sock puppet for Dick Cheney. Do you remember when we found out that the Bush maladministration was salting the entire federal government with little loyal Bushies who would put at all times the Republican Party ahead of the well-being of the nation? Because I do. I only thought about that when I saw the breaking news about Steve Mnuchin, because some lawyer somewhere had to write that. Lacks a legitimate legislative purpose. I mean, that's not something old Steve Mnuchin would come up with on his own, or his Marie Antoinette-like grifty wife. No. There's a lawyer somewhere in the Treasury Department who said, "Well, I don't know. I kind of like my job here, so I guess I better do that." I heard somebody earlier today cite the Washington Post motto, "Democracy dies in darkness," and said instead, "We're watching it die in broad daylight." Well, this is one of those moments. And so now it has to go to court. Or else the House Ways and Means Committee has to issue a subpoena to the IRS, which, by the way, they will also ignore. And so we see, you know, we get, this is more than a glimpse. This is a good long leer at what it looks like when constitutional governance fails and when you've got yourself smack dab in the middle of a constitutional crisis and you've been in one since January the 20th, 2017, but none of the members of the multimillionaire for-profit media have bothered to really talk about it too awful much. But that's for sure what it is. When a legal concept that is as thoroughly established by both time and precedent, tradition, and the law itself as a subpoena, it becomes something that the President of the United States can say, "I just don't want to do it." Then it's falling apart. Bigly. And the question becomes, what do you do about it? Because we're going to wind up without much in the way of a constitutional republic left if at some point in time someone doesn't do something about this. And Dr. Bill touched on some of these things earlier today. Let me highly recommend to you his podcast from earlier today. He'll be on the air tomorrow as well. No Dr. Bill on Wednesday. He's traveling. Their grandson is graduating from college out in Kansas. And, you know, congratulations to him, because he's done this all on his own. Worked his way through college, I mean, the old school way. And so he's graduating, and they're traveling to Kansas for his graduation, Dr. Bill and his wife are. But Dr. Bill was talking about this earlier today and touched on the idea of what kind of remedies there are. And, of course, there's the Constitution itself. But the Constitution requires judges to interpret it. And Dr. Bill is confident, and I share his estimation, that Julius Geezer is going to try to brazen this out on the idea that somehow or another he will have stacked the courts enough that he'll get away with this. Oh, I know, I know. Every time I think back to the reign of error, Monique says, this pains me to say, but damn it, President Obama should have gone after the Bush administration over Iraq. Then again, Chinless Mitch would have weaponized that. I don't know anymore. And I don't know either, Monique, because this is... this is not normal. This is not routine. Yeah, there aren't any tanks rolling down the streets. Nothing's blowing up. Well, I mean, the occasional college campus gets shot up, and you know, look, we've just sort of accepted that as a new normal. Over at Media Matters for America, they pointed out that cable news coverage of the mass shooting at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Yeah, it got less than 45 minutes of coverage because, well, doggone it, there's just so many of them. What's left to say? That we'd like to not have these things anymore, but the Republican Party cares more about political power and cares more about the money that flows through the National Ruble Association than it does about people being massacred trying to go to school. I mean, that's one thing we can say about it, and saying that is absolutely true. But we are in a we're in a state of, and most of us, I think, feel it. That sounds a little like upspeak. But most of us, I do believe, know how bad things are. But somehow or another, we compartmentalize it so that we can pretend that we are, go on pretending that we're living in something approaching a normal world when we absolutely are not. We've got, let's see, Julius Geiser tanked the markets by about 500 points at the opening bell today. With one tweet about more sanctions on China. And then, of course, there was the really big Bruga Bruga story about, and these are, you know, these are all Moran nominations. And to the extent that any of us fall for them, we get nominated too. And it certainly applies to me because last night when the story broke, you know, Agnes was looking at it, and she showed it to me, and I went, oh, shit. U.S. dispatches aircraft carrier group to Middle East based upon Iranian threats. Really? That was the funny thing. I opened the story, and it came from CNN. Not one of their better moments. Barbara Starr reporting. I mean, that's a hell of a headline, isn't it? U.S. deploying carrier and... I mean, we need music behind it. Bum, 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 bum. U.S. deploying carrier and bomber task force in response to troubling Iran actions. And they've got the embedded video right there with the play triangle right over the face of John Pornstash Bolton, who's just itching to wallow in buckets and buckets and buckets of blood. Mm-hmm. And the lead is equally dramatical. The United States is deploying the USS Abraham Lincoln Carrier Strike Group and a bomber task force to the Middle East in response to a, quote, number of troubling and escalatory indications and warnings, unquote, from Iran, U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton said Sunday. Well, see, there's your first tell. The story is based on something John Bolton said. And John Bolton is a criminal and a liar. Okay? And when I say that, I don't mean, oh, well, I've got political differences of opinion with John Bolton, therefore he's a bad person. No, I mean, this guy has a history of being a goddamn criminal and a liar. If there was any teeth whatsoever to the world court, he would have been standing in the dock at The Hague a decade ago. The second paragraph, a U.S. official with direct knowledge of the situation, told CNN the threats were against both U.S. maritime and land-based forces in the region.
Well, Jesus, that sounds serious. Shit.
I mean, so we might be getting it on. But see, that's in Trump-merica, you have to read way the hell down into the story before you find anything resembling a fact. Yeah, there's a statement about the U.S. is not seeking war with Iran. Yes, we are. Great. God almighty. John Bolton masturbates to the fantasies between his ears of bombs going off in Tehran and little Iranian children being blown into their constituent molecular pieces. That's what kind of monster he is. There's a reason he's in the Trump administration. And Mike Pompeo got into the act as well. Jesus. Now, you have to understand that Mike Pompeo, you know, he graduated first in his class at West Point. Ha! Mike Pompeo has an ulterior motive in all this. Mike Pompeo is absolutely rock-solid, lead pipe cinch certain that if he can just get enough ordnance exploding in that tormented region of the world, it'll serve as the bat signal to tell Jesus to come on down. Bolton, I think Bolton just enjoys the blood. And so there's saber rattling. And it goes on for paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. But what's fascinating is that somewhere down there, you can learn some other stuff. Particularly interesting was the version of the story that I saw today. I don't think the quote's in there anymore, because it really didn't make the rest of the story look so good. A simple sentence. It went like this while it was still in the story. There is no indication any action by Iran is imminent. Which sort of let all the air out of the Bruga Bruga balloon for anybody that read that far into the piece. In other words, this is all just bluster and saber rattling, because it get some people off. Oh, and by the way, the carrier, it's not like they sent out an emergency alert and said, oh, okay, we got to get the crews of those ships back, got to get them back to the port and get them aboard, because you got to leave right now. It's been planned for months. But since it was, they figured they'd put out some, you know, some rattling saber jingleage, you know, for the audience of one. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, big thanks to Henry. Thank you, Henry, for getting us started this evening. We're down below $300. We're down to $290 to go. Thank you, Henry. Thank you so very much indeed. Hopefully you'll have some company this evening, and maybe we'll catch up with the end of last week, and maybe even come even with, dare we dream it, and raise the whole 340. It could happen. Thank you. Thank you, Henry. Meanwhile, a few emails rolling in. A lot of this was on Ron and Raleigh's mind as the program began. Subject line, every damn day. This past weekend, the shit hit the fan once again at the Israeli-Palestinian border. When I first heard about the start of hostilities, I was listening to national propaganda radio. The report stated that 400 rockets were fired into Israel from the Gaza Strip. Listening to the reporting, one would get the impression that the rocket attack was unprovoked. Today, however, I listened to Democracy Now, where I got a more complete picture of what happened. Israeli snipers shot and killed two unarmed Palestinian marchers to the border wall. Because the Palestinians do that every now and then. They march to the border wall and they protest the fact that they're living in an open-air concentration camp. And so some Israelis shot them and killed them. This did not sit well with the Palestinians, and in retaliation, Ron writes, the Palestinians wounded two Israeli soldiers. Can we see the difference between these two actions? Two unarmed civilians shot and killed by the Israeli snipers as opposed to two Israeli soldiers who were wounded. Psycho Bibi then let slip the dogs of war, firing drones and other ordnance into Gaza, where 25 Palestinians were killed, including women and children. Of course, including women and children. Four Israelis were killed in the rocket barrage. It's the first time that that rockets from Gaza have managed to hurt anybody since 2014. You know, they don't have any guidance systems on them. They're fairly crude and primitive. But beyond the four deaths, they didn't do much else. Meanwhile, the American multimillionaire for-profit media presented the story as if Israel was the victim. Ron continues and says, the word is that Jared Kushner will roll out the Trump administration Middle East peace plan after Ramadan. Bibi and other top Israeli officials have said there will be no two-state solution, so the question is, what the hell is Jared going to roll out? I suspect he's going to roll out a plan whereby all the Palestinians have to leave town and get absorbed by neighbor states. Because that'll work. And I've even read some things along the way that suggest that there's some buy-in with that madness from our noble, serene, gracious, majestic, most puissant, high royal family of Saudi Arabia, our partners in peace. And yeah, Ron remarks that John Pornstash Bolton's sending the Abraham Lincoln strike group to the Straits of Hormuz to provoke Iran and further choke off their commerce. How much of this shit is Iran supposed to take? But that's not all there is, because in our hemisphere, Ron continues, dadgummit, we're trying to start a shooting war in Venezuela so we can send American troops where they don't belong so that we can steal the resources of a sovereign country. Wrapping it all up in a tidy little bow, Ron says, we're through the looking glass. Nothing seems to cause the Trump lovers any pause. Just keeps getting worse. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. In fact, there's no tunnel. And the only place where I would offer a difference of opinion with Ron is where he says nothing seems to cause the Trump lovers any pause. This isn't the Trump lovers. This is why Julius Geiser has an 80% approval rating among registered Republicans. because this is the same bunch of people that were eager to heap dead, burnt bodies, gore, and veins in my teeth back when the victim of choice was Iraq. And have loved them some Afghanistan war, even though sometime this year, the first American soldier, if it has not already happened, sometime this year, the first American soldier will die in Afghanistan who was not even born on September 11th, 2001. Let that sink in. Yeah, see what I mean? But this isn't just maggots. These are the same bloodthirsty Republicans they've always been. And that is that you know, that's where we get ourselves into a bit of a quandary. Ascribing all of this nastiness to the Trump phenomenon. He's bad, but he didn't originate a whole bunch of this stuff. God, I remember when W wanted to get his war on with Iran so bad he could taste it. And of course, that's why John Bolton is where John Bolton is, because John Bolton has been wanting to get his war on with Iran for so long he can taste it. It's probably fermented in his mustache by now. So that. James in Illinois says, so unfair. They didn't do this to Barack Obama. Harumph. In regard to the tax returns, I know. Yeah, then again, Barack Obama wasn't trying to enrich himself at the expense of the government of the United States of America, so we got that going too. Yeah. Meanwhile, Flavio, I hope you're getting over your head cold, Flavio. Says Mitch McConnell is packing the courts vigorously. This is the sum of impunities going back to Nixon. I'm beginning to think a nation of laws and not of men was just fiction. Have you noticed all the Iran-Contra ghouls are back? But the cable's still on. Oh, yeah, and as long as the cable's on, well, the revolution not only will not be televised, it will not take place. Dennis in Columbus, in regard to the guy occupying the seat of the number one law enforcement official in the United States, says, Attorney General disbar. At the very least, that's what should be done to him. And by the way, I believe a couple of bar associations, the D.C. Bar Association and either Virginia or Maryland, I can't remember which, are in receipt of complaints about the unethical conduct of Bill Barr to prosecution. So, yeah. Albert in Rhode Island says, Bob, they should have gone after Bush's attempted restoration of the Iraqi government. Possibly billions of U.S. government dollars were wasted trying to do it. Talking about the Obama administration. Yeah, yeah. But remember, I mean, I was there. So very likely were you as well. And we remember it as if it was yesterday. We've got to look forward and not back, my friends. As to Mike Pompeo and graduated first in his class at West Point, Lee in New York says, I can believe he graduated first in his class. He only had to get his name read first at commencement. That could be how he graduated first. Oh, you remember that too. Silent R. Lamar says, now wait a damn minute. It was supposed to be Hillary, or was it Obama that was going to start World War III? What the... I know. Meanwhile, James in Illinois points out, Obama's taxes came pre-released. Good point. Valid point. Because in the final analysis, none of this would be taking place if he had done what every other presidential candidate has done since I was a little boy and released his tax returns. But he couldn't. Because the fact of the matter is, he's not rich. He's just a money-grubbing... What did the hedge fund billionaire say? He's a clown living on credit. And so he's terrified for the nation to see that he is broke. And that back when he was doing The Apprentice, not because he was some genius of business, but because he needed the $180,000 a year or whatever it was that they paid him to do it. And that he did have to dummy up his finances with the connivance of Deutsche Bank. Yeah. And that he needs the money from the emoluments. Not the way that John D. Rockefeller needed the money, because all John D. Rockefeller knew how to do was yearn for money. He really needs, Trump needs the money. It's all a big facade, you see. Monique says, and out of that 80% of Republicans who support Trump, how many of them have volunteered for military service? Pretty sure it's not 80%. Oh, I'm pretty sure it's not 40%. Probably not 20, not 10. Back at the height of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, there was a statistic that the war was being fought by something less than 1% of the American population. That very few people actually knew somebody who went off to war. I mean, we did, because we're in West Virginia, and we have... the poverty draft is a very real thing here. Subject line, The Apprentice. Steve in New York says, given how vain he is, if he really didn't need it, he would have done The Apprentice for free. The spotlight and perceived power would have been enough. But he didn't. Meanwhile, Dave, reporting from the blind, I have a Moran Monday nomination that most people in the Horn community will not know. A man named Bill Shirk. Mr. Shirk is a religious right-wing nut job who was a program director at several AM and FM stations in the 70s and the 80s here in Taliban, Indiana. He gave Michael Pence his start on a small television station here in Indianapolis back in the 80s. You know, Mikey, the good, God-fearing, I'm staying in Christian who throws shade to protect Israel from religious righteous anger towards their right-wing government. When are these goddamned idiots going to look over at the Israeli government and say, yes, you have the right to exist. Yes, we'll defend you from aggression, but if you're the aggressor, we're going to call you out like the big boy countries. It's time for Tel Aviv to put on its big country pants and act like a civilized nation. I'd never heard the name of Bill Shirk before. But, you know, there's always a Bill Shirk or of some sort back there. Working mischief. And those are the people who wind up changing history, too, you know. Yeah. So, a lot of morons. On the subject of Republicans enlisting, Lee in New York says, those Republicans who support Trump would really love to serve their country in the armed forces if only they didn't suffer from, you know, bone spurs. By the way, it was interesting, I guess, in a sort of anthropological way. It was interesting that today, the venereal Vespasian hosted the football team from West Point. Because they won the Commander-in-Chief's trophy by beating Navy and having a better, you know, the Navy, the Naval Academy, the Air Force Academy, and the and Army, U.S. Military Academy. They compete for the Commander-in-Chief's trophy, and whoever has the best record wins it. And so the cadets all showed up in their grays. And they all stood while Julius Geezer sat behind the Resolute desk. And I wonder if he's getting a little tottery. Darlene in Connecticut says, I think he was getting $1 million a year for The Apprentice, which he'd passed off as being a pittance for him, as if he was doing the show more or less for charitable purposes. Yeah, I think that $180,000 number, that was $180,000 a show. Thanks for reminding us. Steve in New York says, we can't remember the Palandial cysts. Well, those were rushes. That's what kept him from having to go and save America from the hordes of Viet Cong crossing the Pacific and invading Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Yeah. Like I said, we're plumb filthy with morons today. In fact, in search of one of those morons, let's wander down to Georgistan. I'll bet you our buddy Steve might even know where this place is. Hoshton, Georgia. Steve, you ever heard of the place? I mean, I won't think any less of you if you haven't. Hell, there's only 2,000 people there. But it's about 50 miles north of Hotlanta, which covers a good bit of territory, but might include where Steve is, sort of. But they got a mayor in Hoshton, Georgia, by the name of Teresa Kennerly. And the Atlanta Journal-Constitution did some reporting this week that Mayor Teresa Kennerly just doesn't like. Because back in March, they had a little closed-door session because Hoshton, Georgia needed a city administrator. Now, I don't know how it is that a town of 2,000 needs a city administrator, but what the hell, why not? But the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported that during that closed-door meeting, and then later on talking with colleagues out in the parking lot, they discussed one particular candidate for the Hoshton, Georgia city administrator position, a man by the name of Keith Henry. And Mayor Teresa Kennerly is reported to have said that he wouldn't be a good fit for the job because he's black and the city isn't ready for this. Now, never mind the fact that, like any other municipality in the country, they've got a city code that prevents them from engaging in discrimination based on race, national origin, color, religion, creed, age, or sex. And the way we know about all of this is because two members of the city council went to the city attorney. And the city attorney then went to the mayor and said, listen, you can keep sitting in on the interviews, but I really don't think you need to participate in them based on what you said. Now, meanwhile, Mayor Kennerly has declared that she did not, because nobody's got a YouTube video of her saying it. She said, I do not recall making the statement attributed to me regarding any applicant for the city administrative position, and I deny that I made any statement that suggests prejudice. By the way, Hoshton, Georgia, is almost entirely white folks. Okay, well, Steve does know where it is. It's about an hour north. He says whenever we go to the Pendergrass, the U.S. biggest flea market, we pass right through it. Keep passing, Steve. Keep passing. You don't want to stop there. So that could have been the end of the story, but it's more Ann Monday, so you know that it isn't. Having denied that she said what she was reported to have said by multiple witnesses, well, she's got one friend on the city council, and he leapt to her defense, and that's Hoshton City Councilman Jim Cleveland. Defending Mayor Kennerly, he said, I don't know how they would take it, talking about they being the people of the city of Hoshton, all 2,000 of them. Well, I don't know how they'd take it if we selected a black administrator. She might have been right. That's not going to get you a big banner headline in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. But somehow or another, Jim Cleveland awakened his inner Cliven Bundy. And his inner monologue then got loose. Now listen. He kept on talking. I mean, look, I find that a disgusting statement to make. I don't know how they'd take it if we select a black administrator. She might have been right. Town might not be ready for it. Oh, really? 154 years after the close of hostilities and Civil War? Hoshton, Georgia, still not ready for a black city administrator. Right, got you there, Councilman Cleveland. But he couldn't let it alone at that. Now listen here. I'm a Christian. And my Christian beliefs are you don't do interracial marriage. And I have read a half a dozen versions of this story today, trying to find where it was that City Councilman Jim Cleveland brought in the whole miscegenation issue. Did anybody say that Keith Henry had a white woman wife? Were they afraid of that? What do people think? That sort of thing? What do we tell the children's? I can't find it. Apparently, he just saw an opportunity there because there's a reporter with a recorder, and he was going to do some witnessing about the faith in which he was raised. Yeah, I'm a Christian, and my Christian beliefs are you don't do interracial marriage. That's the way I was brought up, and that's the way I believe. And then, having said that, of course, every person of color in the and most of the white folks in the Horn Family Community Congregation knows the sentence that comes next. It would almost be worth doing a string of dead air, just a space of dead air to give people a chance to write in with their guess about what the next sentence is. But I'm not going to do that. I'll just bet you that if you do write in, we'll have a bunch of people get the answer right. Because I've kind of killed about a minute or so of talking without going to the dead air. That's the way I was brought up. That's the way I believe. I have black friends. I hired black people. When it comes to all this stuff you see on TV, when you see blacks and whites together, it makes my blood boil, because that's just not the way Christian is supposed to live. Hoshton, Georgia City Councilman Jim Cleveland is apparently still reading from his 1855 Bible. This is one of those moments where if you had a reporter on the ground who wasn't just gobsmacked to hear that kind of evil shit, the reporter might have said, and what church do you belong to? Well, I belong to the First Baptist Apostolic Pentecostal Holiness Church of Hoshton, Georgia. Mm-hmm. Makes my blood boil. That's not the way a Christian's supposed to live. No one in what I presume to be Jim Cleveland's relatively long life has ever explained to Jim Cleveland that the region in which Christianity arose was not known for its high quotient of pale pink people. That it weren't nothing but race mixing and interracial marriage over there. I mean, you had your Samaritans marrying your Nazarenes and your Galileans marrying your Sabbateans, and oh, it's just miscegenating all over the place. Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Well, darn. Yeah, what's that, Monique? Monique says, there may be a cowbell in this one. Yeah, I bet black women made his blood boil. See, Strom Thurmond? I told you there was a cowbell in there. You betcha. Yeah, because, you know, nobody ever told Jim Cleveland about, you know, all the old Marses heading down to the quarters at night after getting a belly full of pop skull and going to, it, right. No. Mm-mm. Mr. Keith Henry, whose name got dragged into this whole thing, has, of course, been the one ray of hope in all of this. He says he didn't perceive any racism during the search. He said he backed out of consideration for the job right after the meeting where Mayor Kennerly said what she did, because the city council wanted him to pay his own way from Houston, Texas, to come for an in-person interview, and that they'd reimburse him later. Yeah, I don't blame him. There were three other candidates. Two of them were local, and another one came from somewhere else in Georgia at his own expense. And by the way, after getting busted on the pages of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for what she said, other members of the city council did note that, yeah, she cried and caterwauled and gave a tearful apology to the council, said she wouldn't have anything to do with the search process. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution said, well, why did you apologize if you didn't make the comments? And, well, she just didn't respond. Too bad she didn't have Steve Mnuchin on speed dial. She could have gotten him to say that it lacked a legitimate legislative inquiry. See how we loop these things back and around? Right. And so, Hoshton, Georgia, if you don't have to go there, don't go looking to go there. My best advice. Back to Mike Pompeo, who was first in his class at West Point. Clarence says, this guy should be suited up for service with the 1st Infantry Division. Oh, let's not forget to bring along Trump and Bolton. They seem to miss their turn in the shooting match in Vietnam. These guys are the worst, so eager to send people to war. Yeah, they are. They're horrible. I mean, Pompeo at least served, but I don't know if he ever heard a shot fired in anger. So that's just the beginning. As we knock out the first hour of the program, and again, thanks to Henry and Joy, they've taken between the two of them, they've taken us down below the $300 mark. We got $290 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. It would be helpful if they had. I'm sure they'd love to have some company. You're welcome for the cowbell, Monique. Enjoy it in good health. Oh, where else? What else? Did you see the letter that's out? Oh, by the way, let me just break some hearts early. I mean, I hope I'm not actually breaking any hearts, but there will be scant to no coverage of the royal baby on this program. In fact, I think that's it. So, no. The number is now past 400 of former U.S. attorneys. Who signed a letter saying that they wholeheartedly disagree with Bill Barr to prosecution, these are big names, going all the way back to the Kennedy administration in some instances. They're all former federal prosecutors, and they have all signed a general statement saying that were he not president of the United States of America, Donald Trump would have been charged with obstruction of justice. Interestingly, they are both Republicans and Democrats. Among the more than 400 names, you'll find Donald Ayer. He's a deputy AG appointed by George H.W. Bush in 1989. He knew Bill Barr when Bill Barr was just a considerably younger version of his corrupt self. His successor is Deputy Attorney General. was Bill Barr. Then there's John Martin Sr., former U.S. attorney, then went on to be a federal judge for the Southern District of New York. George H.W. Bush appointed him. Elkan Abramovitz, former chief of the criminal division and federal prosecutor's office in the Southern District of New York. He's also, at present, the lawyer for David Pecker. That David Pecker, who was part and parcel of the felonies likely committed as individual one by Donald Trump in paying off the porn stars. Paul Rosenzweig? Well, he was senior counsel to Ken Starr during the Great Cleanest Hunt. And even he thinks Donald Trump committed obstruction of justice. And yeah, Jeffrey Harris, who was a subordinate of none other than Rudy Giuliani when he was Associate Attorney General in the Reagan Justice Department. So, look at us. Little old us. We've said all along that putting the president above the law is wrong. And lo and behold, we were right. And we didn't even have to serve in the George H.W. Bush administration to be that way. Glad that resonated. Rusty says, the Royals. Ugh, thanks for that. Oh, I'm glad it's appreciated. So, let's take a little break. I'll be back at it, we'll come back and get to the phones. The stress line's open. Somebody's on the other line if you want to jump in. But the stress line is open. And I'll be back in just a second or two. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. I love a good bumper when it presents itself. And that one just kind of did. Right out of nowhere. This is the horn for Monday the 6th of May 2019. And let's run over to the Skype channel and find out what's going on with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Well, that's a good question, Bob. What is going on with Scott?
You know, I've been wondering for years.
Well, greater minds than either of ours have been wondering that, Bob, I'm telling you. Ay, ay, ay. Although, when I think back on it, in my early adolescence, my mom and dad thought it would be wise for me to go down to the weekly, used to call them rap sessions, with a psychologist and peers of my age to talk out whatever issues were going on in my little adolescent self.
You had good parents.
In the late 60s. Well, that's debatable. We'll have that conversation at another time. But anyway, I'm thinking back to some of my peers who were in that weekly group, which I hated because it was on Mondays, and it ended at, I think, 8 o'clock or 8:15 or something. It ran about an hour and a half, whatever. And I would get a ride home, either somebody from my family would come pick me up, my brother or one of my parents, or I'd catch a ride with one of the other kids in the group. And I would never get home before 8:30 on a Monday, which meant laugh-in was half over by that time.
The horror.
Laugh-in was the big Monday night thing on NBC. This was long before The Apprentice. But as I think back to those other young men who were in that group with me, one of them, his dad was like the Commonwealth attorney, which is like the head lawyer on behalf of the public for like Fairfax County or something. And I forget what issues brought him to the group. But another member of the group, his dad was the head of the Virginia Theological Seminary. It was an Episcopalian organization. And a couple of years later, he hooked up with a father and son team that he knew, young radicals of the 60s. They robbed a bank in Arlington, Virginia, killed a cop, drove down to Texas, and then hijacked a plane to Cuba. So I figure I
guess damn, that was ambitious.
I guess that turned out all right.
And yet, I guess that the rap session just didn't help, did it?
Well, it did, in the sense that it was nice to have a place to go, which was a safe space where you could compare notes and bitch about your parents or your teachers or other people over 30. So I guess it did. But as far as insights and stuff into my own psyche, hell, I'm still working on that, Bob. Mercy. But that's not why I called.
Oh, Jesus. No.
How did I even get off?
Well, I don't know, but I've just got this mental image now of a couple of kids hanging out there at the rap session thinking, Cuba.
Well, this guy was pretty radical. I mean, I used to go to anti-war marches and stuff back in those days, or shortly after, and marched for civil rights and went to the wind-up group meeting at the Poor People's March in 68 there at the mall. So I was a little activist in my own right. But thinking back on it, I guess the signs were all there for this kid that sooner or later he was going to break bad in a big, big way. And he stuck it out down in Cuba for, I don't know, several years, 8, 10, 12 years or something, and then finally got fed up with cutting sugar cane under the Havana sun and snuck back in. And he was featured on one of those shows, like American Justice or
oh, wow.
America's Most Wanted, and that was his undoing. They showed one of those age progression photos, you know, artist's rendition of what he would look like, you know, later on down the years. This is about 12, 15 years ago. And somebody called the tip line and ratted him out. It wasn't me, because I'd lost feet. What is Chirps? Chirps, you do this every time. Come on. I'll have to feed her while I'm talking to you, Bob. But anyway, somebody called the tip line, and the cops got him, and he went to prison. I think he's in prison for life or 50 years or something in Virginia. So, but that's neither here nor there. But geez, I can't believe I told that, all that
story.
That's
fascinating.
Well, it's, you know, I've led a very interesting and colorful life. Some of the people I've encountered along the way have been really interesting people. I mean, yes, even Chirps the cat agrees. Yes. You notice she never lets me get... honey, I'm dishing this food into your dish as quickly as I can. I got to chop it up so you don't try to inhale it. I have a theory that she's got a set of kitty cat teeth in her butt.
No. Too early to do that to the program, thank you. No, I don't. That's a theory we're going to take a powder on.
Okay, well, come on, Chirps. Yes, I know. Jesus, you think I've never fed this cat? Come on. Yes, have I ever missed? Yeah, very fractious.
See, this is what makes it professional radio, folks.
I'm sorry, I had no control over that. But anyway... That's done. You notice how quiet you got?
Yeah.
All of a sudden?
Yeah.
Kitty cat food works every time. But, over the years, I've met some and hung out with some pretty amazing people. The other day on my Facebook, I was digging through my archives and found a segment of the Joy Boys program that used to be on the NBC radio station in D.C. when I was a kid. Ed Walker and Willard Scott were the Joy Boys of radio. They chase electrons to and fro-o-o. But anyway, that's where I got my start, really, was going over and watching them work. But I found a commercial that they had done for a local D.C. area restaurant, and I made an MP3 of it and posted it on my Facebook. Listen to that spot if you get a chance.
Okay.
I posted it over the weekend, and you'll see where I get some of their influence rubbed off on me in terms of my state of sense of humor and, you know, mindset of the absurd. I took a little bit of the Joy Boys with me at every radio job I ever had, which explains a lot, which I didn't hold on to them for a long, long time. But none of this is why I called. You may be wondering, why did you call, Scott?
Well, why did you call, Scott?
All right, I haven't looked it up, because I was testing my memory, and at this point I am not sure. But with all this saber-rattling in the general direction of Iran, in the 80s, it seems to me that Iraq and Iran went at it for a while. I believe we helped. I believe
they did, and we backed the Iraquis. Yes.
Yeah.
Sold them poison gas.
Yeah, but who won that one, or was it a draw?
I think it pretty much fought to a draw because nobody marched into the other side's capital.
Well, maybe that wasn't the point, though. Now, when would that have been? That was in the 80s, maybe the mid 80s, for several years.
Yeah, I think that's close enough for government work.
Okay, so that's not too long after the Iran hostage situation. And by the way, a kid I went to grade school with apparently was one of the hostages. I didn't know this until recently. He worked for the State Department or some agency, and at the time...
8 years, Scott. 8 years. 1980 to 1988. 9 years, really.
Wow. I didn't realize. I thought it was in the like 82 or 83, and only lasted a couple of years. But there's no definite winner?
No, it ended when Iran accepted a ceasefire brokered by the UN.
Hmm. Well, the reason I bring that up is if we're saber-rattling in the general direction of Iran in today's world, and we used to be best buddies back when the Shah was in charge of Iran. That's the weird thing. But be that as it may.
Well, that was part of it. I mean, the genesis of it lies in the Iranian Revolution. And because he was not the brightest bulb in the socket, Saddam Hussein thought he might be able to become the dominant player in Middle Eastern politics. He really badly wanted to be that, in addition to being a writer of romance novels.
Really? And, yeah. I never knew that about old.
Oh yeah, yeah. He wrote Burqa Rippers. But we had a hard on for Iran because of the hostage crisis.
Yeah.
And he had enough money to buy our shit. So that's how you get that picture of Don Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam and grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush.
And Saddam basically egged them on with some influence sent over by us.
Well,
sure.
and the other thing is, and I mean, this is just reality. Yeah, he was reminiscent. I mean, in the West, we're really, really bad at understanding Middle Eastern states and Middle Eastern politics. The so-called Arab Street, we're just not good at it at all.
Yeah.
And so we need some sort of Western comparison. Like you say Sunni Islam, and somebody says, "Oh, you mean like the Presbyterians?" Yeah, like the Presbyterians, Cletus. But we saw in Saddam Hussein a guy that was somewhat reminiscent of Marshal Tito.
Okay.
Because there he was presiding. You know, Tito presided over Serbs and Croats and Bosnians and Herzegovinans and sort of made it work under the general principle of everybody's going to behave or I'm going to kill everybody.
Well, yeah, that's I remember those years.
And so Saddam was doing something similar relative to the Sunni minority, the Shia majority. And so we kind of thought, well, you know, at least he's a secularist. You know, he's not machine gunning women for not wearing a beekeeper suit. And at that point in time, we saw him as civilized. And again, his checks cleared.
Yeah.
And since our influence had been pretty much erased with the Iranians, as Silent R. Lamar just pointed out, we needed a puppet. And we thought that we would run our hand up Saddam Hussein's back in the absence of Iran, and that they could put the pressure on. But see, the way it ends up, they both said, "Yay, we win." But the Iranians didn't get any Iraqi territory. They didn't topple, they didn't get rid of Saddam's government. And in the end, everybody just, the United Nations says, okay, you've done 9 years of World War I style trench warfare. There are 1 million people who are needlessly dead.
Yeah.
Let's just pretend this didn't happen.
And people have to also remember, and I'm no expert on the Middle East by any stretch of the imagination, but once upon a time, Iran was known as Persia. And the Persians
and Parthia
don't like, well, okay, now see, I've learned something here, as I often do on this show. But the Persians are not real buddy-buddy with the power structure in Saudi Arabia. As a matter of fact, they hate one another. Am I pretty correct on that? The Iranians and the Saudis do not get along at all well?
Nobody over there likes anybody else.
Well,
The Saudis want to be the BSD. The Iranians were the BSD.
Big swinging.
Yes.
Okay.
And so it's that stems from the ancient conflict between who was going to be the guy who followed Muhammad. Is it going, you know, it's straight out of Monty Python and Life of Brian. It's follow the gourd versus follow the shoe.
And isn't that where the Sunni Shia split occurred?
Yeah, that's exactly where it occurs.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
It's a nephew versus an uncle or something like that. I don't even recall.
Yeah,
along the way, you've got a couple of other little flavors of Islam. But in the main, it's Shia versus Sunni, and no, it's not like the difference between Catholics and Presbyterians. And so we figured, if everybody's at each other's throats, then, you know, we couldn't quite work it up to where we could just go to war with Iran, because the Cold War was still going on, and that was a big pain in the ass. And
well, in today's world, now let me add another layer of complication to this. In today's world, who is Iran allied with? In terms of superpowers, are they buddy buddy with the Russians?
No, they're not crazy about the Russians, but they've arguably got undeniably a better relationship with the Russians than they do with us.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the key. Now, did Putin write Trump a note saying it was okay to ramp up the military presence?
And that's what makes it so difficult. We're terrible at this, because on the other hand, we're fighting shoulder to shoulder with Iranians against ISIS.
Well, yeah, there is that.
But the Iranians are also in support of Hamas, who supplanted the PLO. I mean, there are no clean relationships over there.
No, I wouldn't expect that there would be.
And the Saudis, as they have proven throughout modern history, will sell out the Palestinians in a heartbeat. And that's probably what's coming next now.
Now, how well will we would prevail if it was us up against Iran, wouldn't we, militarily?
We hope so, but how did that work out against Iraq? I mean, they just melted back into the sand and blew us up piecemeal. That's what's meant by that term, asymmetrical warfare.
Yeah. Well, and think back also to the early 50s, like 53, 54, thereabouts. The U.S. intelligence people and the British intelligence people hatched a plan to overthrow Mossadegh, who was an...
That's where that all begins.
Yeah. So it's like... That region is an ongoing clusterfuck. But when you think about it, some of the animosity that lingers even to this very day in that region, Iran and Iraq, weren't the lines of those countries pretty much imposed upon them in the wake of World War One?
Absolutely. Yes, it's a 100-year clusterfuck.
Well, two things to as far as viewing tips or reading tips that will get you through the night. If you have Amazon Prime, check out Daniel Yergin wrote a book years ago called The Prize, and PBS did a multi-part series, documentary series, entitled The Prize. And the video is on Amazon Prime, and it's somewhat dated. I think it came out in 91 or 92, and a lot has happened since then in the world of petroleum and the Middle East. But it's still, you can get a good history of who was friends with whom and who screwed who over to get that oil, okay? The price. Check that out on Amazon Prime. The other thing, in terms of reading, if you want to get a fix on what we and the British did to Iran in the early 50s and brought the Shah into power, is a book that's probably about 12 or 15 years old by now called All the Shah's Men. And that tells that story in pretty lurid detail. But
It was a nasty little operation that Ike let the CIA run as a favor to Churchill because Churchill couldn't get it done by the UK.
Yeah. But it's the intrigue that this country has been involved in over the decades and the centuries is mind-boggling. And most of the people, I doubt that they teach history at all well in today's public school system. They don't teach civics at all, which gives you a sense of why things are so screwed up in terms of civic participation in any meaningful or positive way in this country has gone straight to hell in recent decades. So they don't teach civics at all. And I'm sure Iran, Iraq, World War I covers maybe a page and a half in most high school history textbooks. And that's one reason I'm glad I came along when I did and got a Catholic education in the 60s, in grade school anyway, is you did come out of the process having learned something that was worthwhile. Religion classes notwithstanding.
Right, and as Brother Deacon Asa points out, the winner of the Iran-Iraq War was...
What is that?
Stand by. Sorry, I had to make a computer shut up.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Agnes, but the voice sounded rather angry.
Downright peremptory. No, Brother Deacon Asa pointed out the winner of the Iran-Iraq War was the defense industries of primarily the U.S. and the Soviet Union.
Yeah, well, no surprise there. So we would do all right up against Iran. In today's world,
it's that whole Powell Doctrine nastiness. We'd lob $1 billion worth of Tomahawk cruise missiles or $2 billion worth at them, fly over a bunch of stealth bombers, murder a bunch of children, but sooner or later you got to go in with the so-called boots on the ground, and it's really not anything that we're prepared to do.
Well, what I've missed in the story, Bob, is this. I saw the headline first thing this morning on CBS this morning, which is, since I don't have like MSNBC or any of the other cable news stations, you take your information where you can get it. So it was the big story at the top of the show this morning. But for some reason, I missed the part about what prompted this. Why do we have this sudden raging, American hard-on for Iran?
Because it's a made-up load of horse shit. We've got a hard-on for Iran because John Bolton has always had a hard-on for Iran.
Yeah.
And he came into office with that self-same hard-on for Iran. I guess he makes some money out of it somewhere. That's usually the motivation. But this is some serious dog wagging, anything to get the American people's attention off of the criminality of Donald Trump. And these exercises were planned months in advance. So they just ginned up some bullshit around it in order to make it look like we were flexing our muscles.
Yeah, and when you look at Donald Trump, who gets saggier by the moment, okay, I can't apply flexing muscles looking at that poor specimen of that poor Hulk shell of a human being. Jesus, that's a frightening thought. I don't want to look at him. But, well, you talk about, I heard something, and maybe I knew it from before and just missed it or never really paid strict attention to it. I know a couple of times I and our friend here in San Diego complimented me about recommending the YouTube videos of Daniel Sheehan. I saw one the other day which recounted Trump's first pronouncement as a candidate, official pronouncement, about his supposed foreign policy that was supposed to take place at one venue. And then shortly before it was supposed to happen, it was moved to the Mayflower Hotel. This was like, I think, in the spring or summer. Now, I guess it was the spring of 2016, okay? But before the gathering where he gave his pronouncement about foreign policy, candidate Trump, there was a private cocktail party by invitation only, attended by, among other people, the diplomats, the ambassadors from Russia, Italy, and Singapore. And the gist of the story is, part of that was to divvy up a former Russian oil gas conglomerate that had been owned and operated by the Russians but was going to be going private. And it was going to be split up, I think, five ways. So if you could find five people with deep pockets, they would each put up 20%, and they would be the new owners of this former Russian gas and oil concern. But anyway, the thinking that Daniel Sheehan was talking about was since Trump believes that climate change is a hoax and a joke, it doesn't matter to him whether it's real or not, because it's melting the polar ice caps at the North Pole, under which is a reserve of petroleum, which makes probably Saudi Arabia look like, you know, a small fish pond in somebody's backyard. Like he gave the number of billions and billions of barrels, and it's solely designed to make somebody rich as a motherfucker. Okay, so if you're one of those people with deep pockets and you can buy 20% of that, you're in the money. How do they say it? Shitting in tall cotton. But apparently Trump's deal was, he doesn't have deep pockets. Okay. But what he could do is get a finder's fee of 0.5%, which is $200 or $300 million, to bring the parties together. And that's supposedly what took place at this invitation-only cocktail party at the Mayflower on the evening of Trump's official first foreign policy statement. I'll send you that link. Or you can look it up. It's on YouTube. Daniel Sheehan, and I think Oil Baron is in the title. I forget the full title, and I don't have it in front of me. But I saw this thing from an Australian journalism website from a couple of years ago where there's another theory, but I hadn't finished reading it. So I'm going to send it to you, and you can mull it over, you know, in your own free time. Because, you know, his cozying up with Russia has always been the question that comes to people is, well, you know, why would he do that? Because no other president has really done anything like that. And some people say, well, it's the P tape. If they didn't have something to hold over.
Oh, well, I had a note. I had a message from our buddy Reverbo, the human boy, a little bit ago. And he said, did I hear this correctly? We're sending some warships toward Iran because there are indications they may attack us. Sounds like a move to provoke Iran into making the first strike, a la Gulf of Tonkin, and we have yet another war. If we're always going to be ruled by crazy, greedy egomaniacs, then we're surely doomed. The human man as a viable life form seems a failure.
But that leads me to wonder aloud, well, what happened to candidate Trump's pronouncements about, you know, no foreign intervention, America first. How does this do?
Well, somewhere along the way, somebody's explained to him that he can make a nickel out of it.
Well, you think that's yeah, because I don't see NBC knocking at his door asking him to come back for a reboot of The Apprentice. You know.
Right.
But anyway, that's it's pretty amazing. Part of it is probably, you know, a wag the dog thing to get, like you say, get the attention away from what the House is up to, because they're doing it on several fronts. They're after the taxes, and that'll probably end up in the Supreme Court, where you kind of hope that John Roberts has his wits about him and actually, you know, thinking ahead to his legacy, actually sides with the liberals this time. Because he's done that, kind of, at a couple of rare instances in the recent past. And, you know, we already know that the GOP Senate is a bunch of crap. And the presidency, we should know by now, is a bunch of crap under Trump's management. The only thing we got going is the democratically controlled House and maybe the Supreme Court if we catch them on a good day and the Chief Justice. Wouldn't that work out a 5-4 for release of the taxes if John Roberts sides with the liberals?
Well, assuming the liberals all stand together, yes.
Well, I would hope that they would. I mean, I'm sure
so would I. I don't have any reason to think otherwise, but I mean, this is just a matter of being able to call for, I mean, this is a matter of following a damn statute.
Yeah.
There's nothing, I went and read the damn thing. There's nothing in there that says, unless the Secretary of the Treasury determines that the House Ways and Means Chairman doesn't have a legitimate, no, it's not there. In
yeah.
fact, it says, you do this, and if you don't do this, you go to prison.
Yeah, that's pretty straightforward.
Now, Steve Mnuchin is running the risk of going to prison, but the operating philosophy behind all of this, Scott, is that no one is going to touch them because they've rigged the game. You know, you don't just, I didn't turn it over. Let me pack a bag, get my toothbrush and my soap on a rope. I have to go to prison now. Somebody has to send you to prison.
Yeah. Like Cohen. Didn't he start his adventure?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Today?
And if I were him, I would be afraid for my life. Because I did learn one thing over the weekend. The majority of go figure. The majority of the prison population in the United States is pro-Trump.
Really?
Yeah, doesn't that just make you want to put the swirly straw in the rot gut bottle?
That's a mind bender. Because you think of who's been arrested and sent to prison, convicted, supposedly, and sent to prison over the last 30 years. I would not think that that number of people... What's the number of incarcerated people in this country? We lead the world.
It's around 1% of the population.
Yeah. Well, there's a shitload of people. I can't imagine. I just can't imagine that. Because there's a lot of brothers in prison, and you can't imagine that they are Trump fans.
Well, you can't make any assumptions either. But the point that I was making, Scott, is that a court has to send you to prison, and there has been a calculated decision made inside the Trump regime that there aren't any courts that are going to send Steve Mnuchin to prison.
Well, that's disheartening. Just when I think I'm doing all right, reality slaps me in the face.
Well, I mean, do you see any reason to doubt that?
Well, you know, we're early in the game. We're only like 2 years into it, and hopefully.
Oh no! Trump but over the weekend, Jerry Falwell Jr.
Oh fuck him!
Just I mean, the living, walking, breathing definition of a blivet, 10 pounds of shit in a 5 pound onion bag. Declared that we need to add two. I mean, how do you even get to the? Where do you even say this? We need to add 2 years to Donald Trump's first term of office because of presidential harassment. As an added, just a finger in the eye to a very particular demographic, he termed those 2 extra years as reparations.
Oh God, no! Are you making that up, Bob?
No, sir. No, just sir, I am not. No, I'm not.
Well, didn't Trump himself say or tweet something about the first 2 years in office don't count because he was being investigated? No, granted.
Yeah, that's he retweeted Jerry Falwell yesterday.
Oh, okay. Well, I knew it from somewhere, but I missed the Falwell connection. Jesus. And what is this shit with the he doesn't want Mueller to testify.
Yeah, and somebody has to have explained to him that, well, he can't, he's got, it, no, don't matter what he wants.
Yeah, but the word he used, the operative word was, the Democrats don't get a do-over. Well, this is not a do-over.
We didn't get a do.
Well, there you go. Give yourself a cowbell, Bob. But
a small one, yeah.
But the craziness goes back a few days before now to the Kentucky fucking Derby, where the horse, maximum protection?
Maximum security.
No, it's not a feminine product. Maximum security. He's saying that the world is too politically correct and that horse
the horse was obviously brown and probably gay.
Well, maximum security?
Yeah, like maximum security prison.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I thought maybe he had.
But we live in a world that is controlled by the strongest force in the universe, far stronger than gravity, and that's irony, Scott.
Yeah.
And the fact that the horse that came in second was declared the winner of the Kentucky Derby was completely lost on the guy who came in second and was declared president of the United States.
Oh, did you really go there and say that, Bob?
I done did.
This man, I'm telling you, if we do not send this man on his merry way or to prison, whichever comes first, when the opportunity arises in a year and a half, then shame on us and woe be unto us. I'm telling you, man, it's Looney Tunes, Bob. No, I take that back. I happen to be a big fan of Looney Tunes cartoons and Bugs and Daffy and Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam and all the rest of them. Looney Tunes were well-crafted, well-thought-out, rather clever little exercises in animation once upon a time. So this disparages the term Looney Tunes to describe Trump as anything like that endeavor. Christ, Mel Blanc will rise up in his grave. And who were some of the directors? Chuck Jones and all the greats at Warner Brothers Animation back in the day. They'd come back and haunt me for comparing their masterful work to anything remotely resembling the Trump administration. So I'm going to have to rethink it and come up with a new designation, because it ain't Looney Tunes. It's just plain dipshit.
Madness. The word you're looking for is madness.
Yeah, virulent madness. Can't say that word very well. But anyway, that's where my mind is today. We've gone. It's been quite a little conversation. I'd down memory lane, and Iran, saber rattling in the direction of Iran, and Mnuchin saying no to the what district would that case land in on its way to the Supreme Court? Because you know they're not going to try to fast track it. They want to play.
Oh no, they want it slow walked. Well, it has to. The initial case. First you subpoena the IRS. As far as a criminal violation that would send Steve Mnuchin to prison, you have to make a referral to the Attorney General of the United States, who happens to be who?
Bar to
prosecution.
Prosecution, yeah.
Right.
Well, isn't he being subpoenaed, or no? They're voting
so Barr,
Wednesday.
So Barr is going to just sit there and say "fuck all of y'all," and they get away with it. You got it?
Well, what happens with contempt if he's found or in contempt?
Well, the committee can vote him in contempt, and then it goes to the floor, and the House votes him in contempt, and then the contempt citation is sent to the guy who's been voted in contempt, and nothing happens.
Yeah, but who's the sergeant at arms of the House?
Isn't who cares?
Doesn't he have some jurisdiction?
No, if Bill Barr sets foot inside the Capitol.
Yeah, but wait a minute. I thought that if a person is subpoenaed to appear, I remember this from Watergate, the Senate hearings, and maybe it's different, that they have to, they will be compelled by the enforcement arm of the Congress to appear. I don't think that's handled by the U.S. Marshals. Or it may be, but I don't think it is.
No, if he's sitting there in a committee room testifying, Scott,
yeah,
the committee chair can say, will the sergeant-at-arms please take this man into custody and take him down to the basement jail?
Yeah, but I thought that and it's not the Capitol Police. It's somebody at the instruction of the sergeant at arms who can go out beyond the environs of Capitol Hill, Jenkins
and
Hill,
engage in a shootout with the Secret Service or the FBI. Sure.
Well, now maybe I'm mixing it up with something, but it seems to me that there is a mechanism in place in terms of going out and compelling. I mean, he's got to go home at some point. He's going to go out and have a drink or dinner somewhere and be in public.
And the sergeant at arms can't affect any of that.
Well, fuck. You're no fun. I mean, you are fun, but...
This system, here's the problem. Here's the problem. This system was designed by people who had significant disagreements with each other, okay? Hamilton and Madison weren't exactly drinking buddies.
No.
And there were hard words passed back and forth throughout the process of drafting and ratifying the Constitution. But they all made a certain presumption that everybody was operating in some kind of good faith. And as long as everybody's operating in good faith, the system can work. But as we are finding out now, much to our chagrin, all you gotta have is somebody who says, "Fuck it, I'm gonna game this every way I can." And so Bill Barr is right there, and Rod Rosenstein, you know, who said he could land the plane, remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is there until May, and then some toady. Hey, maybe it'll be Matt Hot Tub Crime Machine Whitaker, for all we know.
God, there's a name from the past.
Will be put in place, and so congressional citations of contempt, just go there and die.
So the founders basically never envisioned, even in their wildest dreams, anything like this, and made no provision for it because they never saw the need.
Well, I mean, one of their arguments for the Electoral College was, hey, one of these days the people may elect a real goddamn moron. But thanks to us, we've got the Electoral College who'll say, no, we're not going to put up with this. And they'll stop a real live crooked moron from becoming president. How'd that work out?
Well, in my lifetime, I don't think that I can think of maybe one or two elections when maybe one or two pledged electoral votes didn't play out that way. The person voted his conscience or her conscience. And, you know, and see, that's just the thing. It's how do I put this? Even the safeguards seem to be failing us.
That's precisely the point.
Well, there you go, I guess.
Lone voice crying in the wilderness, I've been saying since January 20th, 2017, we are in a constitutional crisis. But the powdered, pampered panjandrums of the multimillionaire for-profit media don't see it that way because their checks are still clearing.
Well, and I know
they still hobnob with people who know which fork to use with the fucking shrimp.
I know that it will seem as if I'm beating a dead horse or something or belaboring a point, but I'm going to keep saying this until it registers with people so that we don't repeat the same dumb mistake. I give you Michigan, and this is about the Electoral College. I give you Michigan, I give you Wisconsin, and I give you Pennsylvania. And the votes that determined the allocation of the electoral votes, which put Trump over the top in 2016, were granted on the basis in those three states of something like 77,000 some odd votes.
Sure. Let me put it this way, and I think this will speak to you, because I know you've got a deep understanding and an abiding recall of Watergate.
Oh, God, yes.
If everything that happened in Watergate happened today, Nixon would never have had to leave office.
Oh, hell no. And there are a number of factors which made it play out the way that it did versus how it might play out today had he pulled a Trump on America and the world. First of all, you had people on both sides in the House and the Senate who knew that you go up to a certain point and then you go no further in terms of your own personal preference. There's a higher magnitude of behavior that you latch on to when it comes right down to it. Okay, so there's that. There's also the Supreme Court did what it was supposed to do. And the Senate, for crying out loud, doing the Senate Watergate hearings. So you've got that. And then you've got the House Judiciary Committee forming up the articles of impeachment. And then you have Nixon himself, who I think you pointed out a couple of times. Say what you will about the guy, flaws and all.
That he had a molecule of shame? Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
But I think you're kind of blowing past my point here. When the court told him to turn over the tapes,
yeah.
If Nixon had simply said no, What happens?
Well, he did, by the way. He did fight it when the Senate wanted the tapes.
Right, right. Okay. But eventually he was ordered by the court to turn over the tapes, and he did so,
yeah.
Right?
He did, yeah.
Yeah. But so when that happens, what if he just says no?
Well, that things play out entirely differently.
Because it was only the tapes that proved that he was an active participant in the cover-up and had known about this shit from jump that buried him.
Mm-hmm.
One of the few valuable things that Joe Scarborough ever says on that My Little Filthy Morning Habit is when he talks about how his sainted daddy was a rock-ribbed Republican. And that he was with Nixon all the way to the end. They're just persecuting a good man. That's all.
All the way to the end?
All the way to the end. And it was only when the tapes got played that he said, well, I guess he needs to go. But he's a good man. He just got caught.
Oh, okay. Well, that wasn't all the way to the end. Now, if you get what I'm saying, I mean, when I hear to the end, that means to San Clemente and beyond. So I'm glad that Joe's daddy, his sainted daddy, did come to his senses in the final inning or so, or half inning. But yeah, the distinction is not—it's not lost on me. I get exactly what you're saying, Bob, and makes me yearn for previous times when
and see, Brother Deacon Asa pointed out something a minute ago, and he said, y'all may not be ready to admit this to yourselves, but they're using language that tells me they're setting up the septic psycho to be president for life. And I think I've been ready to say that. I've been ready to admit that. This fucker wants to be a dictator. He really, really wants to, because among other things, regardless of what we think we know about what he did, Scott, he knows what he did. And he knows how crooked he's been all of his miserable, misbegotten life. Okay? And based on the conversation we had with Billable Rick about statutes of limitations the other night, well, he knows he's got to be in office until 2022 for that statute of limitations to run. That means
so what does he do about 2020? Because I kind of think that the...
Well, he waits for Democrats to do what Democrats do best. You know, circle up the firing squad and start going after each other. He runs on the economy, and the maggots will happily say, well, hell, he's like Mark great again. I got 4 minimum wage jobs now. Damn, well, right, we're making America great.
Let me put a baseball bat through your spokes on your bicycle there on the business of the economy. We're pretty much at the 10-year point of, I don't know that it's a bullish economy, but compared to where we were in, let's say, 2008 versus now, we're 10 years further down the road, and the recovery, I'm not going to say it's totally out of steam, but what are we, 18 months away from the election? The economy, just from historical reckoning, the good times don't last forever. Recessions inevitably occur. And
well, there's a school of economic thought that wonders if they are inevitable.
Well, let me put it this way. Maybe inevitable is not the word, but if you look through economic history, there are good times and there are less than good times. And then there are purely shitty times. And I've lived long enough to have seen a little of all of that. Okay? I'm just saying that I wouldn't necessarily say that the economy 18 months, you know, 14 months from now, whatever, is going to be at the same place that it is now.
Well, okay. Look at it this way.
Well, wait a minute. You've also got to figure into the equation. How is as good as this economy could ever be over the last 2 years of Trump or the last 10 years, just generally speaking, how is that showing up in the lives of people in this country? None of it's trickled down to me lately. I mean, I got a cost of living increase in my Social Security, but I also got a rent increase coming up in July, okay? And maybe I'm the exception, but I would dare to think that there's a lot of people who are not really rolling in dough, if you get my meaning. I mean, but yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off with that. But
well, I was just going to ask you, you remember the Bush tax cut? It's your money. Remember that?
Was that where we got like $100
yeah.
or something?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get $100 this time, I'll tell you that.
Okay, but you remember that. Well, that was 2000. That was 2003. And everybody got a check, and so he gets reelected, sort of, in 2004. Now, all along the way, people were saying, wait, this is madness. This is not going to work. This is that same crap that your daddy called voodoo economics. And the chickens are going to come home to roost. But everybody who was advising W said, yeah, they're going to come home to roost, but they're going to come home to roost after you're gone. And that's where they proved to be wrong. Because yeah, they came home to roost a few months early, before Bush could get out of town.
Yeah.
Well,
the better part of that final year of Bush's term, his second term, the handwriting was definitely on the wall during most of his final year.
Right. So let's apply the same math to the Trump tax cut. 5 years. That's 2021. And so it doesn't matter what happens as long as it doesn't happen before November the 3rd, 2020.
Well, isn't the tax benefit for most people, not the ultra-rich, doesn't that sunset out after, like, a couple of tax seasons?
Well, there was no real benefit in the first place. Look at all the people in the blue states who are getting bled blue just trying to pay their goddamn property taxes that can't be deducted anymore.
Yeah.
That wasn't a boating accident.
Did you say a boating accident?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good Jaws line. This is not a boating accident.
Yeah. We're going to need a bigger boat besides.
And so, as long as he can keep the... And remember, Scott, we're talking about maggots. We're talking about people who pick up cocktail weenies with their toenail clippings, okay?
Who?
That's why they're all sharp and pointy and stuff.
You got on me for Chirps' second set of teeth, and you're talking about picking up cocktail weenies with toenail clippings. Ooh. Anyway.
And by the way, Monique says, tell Scott, Barr has to be in the Capitol to be arrested. The Sergeant-at-Arms only has jurisdiction on Capitol Hill grounds, period.
All right. I just for some reason thought that, because what I was thinking about, if Alexander Butterfield, the guy who revealed Nixon's taping system in the White House, he was invited, subpoenaed, whatever, to come and testify before Senator Irvin's Watergate hearings. If he had decided not to, I've heard him interviewed saying that somebody would have come to where he was, which happened to be at the barber shop, and compelled him to come. And the barbershop wasn't on Capitol Hill, as I recall. It was somewhere else, but that's neither here nor there.
Jack just wrote in and said, I'm a-looking for that good economy, too. I hear you, Scott. Where the heck is this economy they're talking about? Well, I was out over the weekend, and Golly Moses, retail may be dead in the rest of America, but I mean the mall and over in Beckley, was the parking lot was full. So people perceive that something good is happening for them. I don't know what it is.
I'm just saying that, pardon me, if we've got 14, 16, 18 months before the election, a lot can change in that time, is all I'm saying. I see by the clock on the wall that I need to go, but let me tell you that I inadvertently ordered a movie the other night on Amazon Prime. I hit the wrong button, and then I was kind of stuck with it. But I've been wanting to see it for a long time because you've mentioned it a couple of times. Terry Gilliam's movie from like 1985, Brazil, I had never seen before, Bob. And watched that thing the other night. I'm telling you, where have I been all these years? How did I miss that movie?
Yeah, it's kind of brilliant, isn't it?
I'm telling you, and it was only like a 2-day rental or whatever. When I can afford it, I'm going to have to buy the Blu-ray or the DVD and really spend some quality time with that film, because it blew me away. Even watching it once, I was like kicking myself for waiting so long before I got around to seeing it. It's a hell of a movie, Bob.
Oh, it's genius. Yeah. And by the way, just a little, a couple of updates for you, because, you know, our conversations spark other conversations.
Yeah.
Lady B, the brothers like him, Trump, because he's a gangsta. He's getting away with murder, and he's got very important white folks upset about it, but they can't do anything about it because he's being protected by the very same rules that protect them. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't make sense, Lady B says, at least not to those of us who read and actually give a damn. But does it make sense to people who live lives of desperation, to those who know their lives aren't really worth a good goddamn to the elite? Yep, it does. We're all going to be worm food one day for many folks. That can't come soon enough. Meanwhile, as to Iran, over on Twitter, Hey Sailor says, we would need an army 3 times the size we have to prevail against Iran. We would need a draft. Bolton is an idiot. By the way, every war game shows us losing to Russia and China, singly and together. We're the sick man of the world today. Thanks, Cheney. Another coward. Yeah, we run along on our military's reputation, but the fact of the matter is, if we were the kick-ass military we say we are, we wouldn't still be in Afghanistan. We would have gotten that job done. Two, we wouldn't have made the mess of Iraq that we made of it. And on and on and on and on.
Well, let me tell you, your ringing of the reality bell earlier in the conversation before you came to this call about the statistic that someone in the coming year will be the first soldier to be killed over there who wasn't even born when 9/11 occurred. That reached right up my spine and grabbed me by the brain.
Yeah, at that point in time, it's a forever war.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know.
So, I don't know.
And the fact of the matter is, there's no way we ever win a land war against a people, a nation for whom our population is a fucking rounding error. Okay? That's China.
Yeah. Yeah.
Russia, we lose against because they're there and we're not. And so Putin's purpose has been to further hollow out our relationship with NATO so that a grand alliance such as defeated global fascism in the form of Germany can't come about when it needs to stop, say, you know, them.
Yeah.
And so I saw a story earlier today where the Marine Le Pen is playing footsie with the proto-fascist right-wing government of Poland and Hungary and Italy And there are multiple games being played, and we're not very good at any of them.
Yeah.
And we're just sure we're going to find the queen if they just turn it. That's got to be it right there. I lost $1 million. Oh, fuck. Yeah. Great. Scott, have a good one, man.
I will, Bob, and thank you for a good conversation. It's always good, but today was extra special good because it was, I even learned stuff, and that's a good thing when I can shut up long enough to learn something new.
All right. Well, you take it easy, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye now.
See ya.
Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. Let's see. Well, we're well into the third hour of the program. And again, fundraising goal stands at $290. If we could get that down to $200 and just finish last week, that'd be awesome all by itself. And that's only $190. That's 19 people at $10. So, you know, head on .live and the contribute button. Oh, wait. Okay, I got somebody on the stress line. Let me hook up the Bluetooth again because it dropped. And we'll be right there in a second. That's so annoying. Well, it's hooked up. Okay, let's try it this way then. Hey, Todd.
Wow. Okay. I don't know what was going on. It was like a delay. I don't know.
No, you were on the stress line, and the Bluetooth dropped, and then you're just hearing me through the speaker, and it's awful. And yeah.
I thought it was in the time warp. Okay. Well, God, all right. That was you and Scott had a wonderful conversation there with history, and we're dealing with these washed out people like Bolt. I'm not going to get excited. I'm not going to yell. I'm really not, because we're past that. But I seem to remember where John Bolton was basically last off, the professional planet. You know, he was like selling ice cream out of an ice cream truck or something.
Oh, selling meat out of a freezer in the back of a pickup truck?
Oh, now you know damn well that's a cowbell. That's a cowbell, damn it. You know that is. Oh, man.
We got those folks.
Yeah, right. You know, he had no respect. You know, nobody respected him. But one thing Scott said that got me thinking, do you remember when Khashoggi was killed and our president had trouble getting in the way of an arms deal? Because he said, well, I don't know, we're making too much money. He's making too much money. You see what I'm saying?
I think. Continue, please.
Well, we have to remember who bats who in Iran and Iraq, you know, on that side, right? Because, you know, they're the far-right people. You know, the Saudis are you know, they back the Wahhabis.
Right, so, who hate the Shia.
Exactly. And so that's what the Iran-Iraq war part of it was about. And, you know, things are not always nice and easy. They're not always black and white. That's why Saddam was let to do with, like, you guys explained. I don't want to rehash that, but you know, because he did keep things in order. As the country was cut in three, you know, the Kurds, the Sunnis, the Shiites, you know. But, yeah, if you look back and listen to him, that's what I see. Because it's always about how much money is he going to make. Because I'm thinking all these foreign deals, many of them, especially arms deals, he's probably got a shell company set up for each one. Or maybe one because he's so stupid.
The Saudis know how to set up a Swiss bank account.
Well, that's easy too, isn't it?
And so, you know, you just put, you put Donald Trump's sweetener in a numbered Swiss bank account, and done. Mm-hmm. And when the auditors say, you know, hey, we thought the private, you say, well, you know, fuck off. We're the Saudis and he's Trump and nobody can touch us.
Nobody can touch us.
And that's how you wind up in a kleptocracy. Which, curiously,
we're in trouble.
And the model, look, let's understand one other thing, Todd. The model that Trump is operating on is the Putin model. Russia is a kleptocracy. There's a story that I've been hanging on to for a couple of, for about a week or so now.
Please.
That I thought was sort of telling.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with the Russian oil industry. And it came from Reuters, so it's probably solid.
Right.
It was Easter weekend, at least in the West, because remember, the Russian Orthodox and the Greek Orthodox and the Syrian Orthodox and the Armenian Orthodox will fight to the death over when Easter is. Righto? Same with Christmas, same with New Year's. But it was Easter weekend here in this part of the world when a bunch of European oil companies got an email, and it was in Russian, in Cyrillic.
Mm-hmm.
And Reuters reports that he said, well, what the hell does it say? And he sends it off to the Moscow office for translation.
Right.
And, wow. There's a Russian state pipeline company in Belarus called Gomeltransneft. Makes me feel like I'm eating peanut butter.
And off to Gazprom?
Gomeltransneft. It's a pipeline company. Kind of,
okay. Right.
You know, kind of like those Canadian assholes who built the... Yeah, right.
Okay.
They run pipelines in Poland, Ukraine, Hungary, Slovakia, and the Czech Republic. And it had to do with a load of oil coming down the Druzhba pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to do with about $2.7 billion worth of oil.
That's a lot of oil.
Reuters got hold of the email after it was translated, and it read, "We ask you to immediately take all measures to avoid potential losses and other negative consequences." And so, for the following 10 days, European oil firms quit purchasing Russian oil to the tune of about a million barrels a day.
Like that was a directive.
Well, it was a 10%. It was 10% of European oil imports, because somehow or another, they managed to ruin the oil. Now, oil's poisonous as shit in the first place, so you don't really think in terms, Todd, of, well, we spoiled the oil. But lo and behold, all of a sudden, oil went above $75 a barrel, 6-month high. And as of the date of this story, a week or so ago, no, not a week. Anyway, there was still no real answer to what happened as of last Tuesday. But what happened?
Oh, this is very recent.
The oil got contaminated.
With what?
They're called organic chlorides.
Oh.
And they use them in the oil industry to make oil wells put out more oil. And they enhance the flow of the crude.
Okay. Like a blood thinner.
I guess you could say that.
For oil, okay.
And so you have to take it back out of the oil before you can put it in the pipeline, and oopsie, somebody didn't do it. And when it doesn't get done, It ruins your refining equipment. And then if temperatures get high enough, it just releases deadly chlorine gas.
Wouldn't you know? Cui bono.
And it's May the 6th now. The Belarus State Oil Company said, no, we're not expecting to have clean oil before May 4th. It may take months before we can resume normal operations.
It's out of our hands.
And so this Druzhba pipeline network that sent this contaminated oil, well, they found it in Belarus, in Poland, in Germany, in Ukraine, and in the Baltic port of Ust-Luga. And they're all served by that network.
Mm.
One Western oil company exec said, this oil is not sellable. You can't just dump the price and sell it at a discount. Nobody wants this oil. So, on the one hand, you look and you go, hey, somebody's not very good at this. But as Reuters points out, there are some people who are babbling about the possibility of sabotage.
Babbling?
And then there are folks who are wondering if they're just incompetent. I mean, you put the stuff in. How do you forget to take it back out?
But that is really insidious. Because when you start talking about ruining the refinery equipment, you know what it takes to start up that refinery again? That's a lot.
Oh, sure.
That's a lot. My God.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it. There's more to it. There's a lot. There's a lot to that. Good grief. So what do you attribute that to?
Well, nobody knows. But Igor Dyomin told mm-hmm. Russian media, well, contamination was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Transeft, they've got an executive by the name of Tokarev. Mm-hmm. And Tokarev got a sit-down meeting. With huggable, lovable, snuggly, cuddleable, wouldn't harm a fly, Vladimir Putin.
That's a big deal.
And he said, dear leader, the contaminated oil was pumped deliberately by private company.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Reuters said, they didn't know who owned that particular terminal and couldn't find out.
Oh, this is... Ooh.
Isn't this a fascinating little story?
That's the gravy, son.
I mean, if you're Vlad Putin, maybe you might say, yeah, we have determined was Ukrainian terrorists. We will be invading presently. More. We already invaded some. We will invade some more.
Mm-hmm. All the excuse they need, right?
The scale of the contamination suggests corrupted crude could have been pumped into the pipeline for days, if not weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't notice that?
That story is massive. Because you remember, let's go way, way back, at the 2016 elections, there were a lot of people talking that both Trump and Clinton had some ties to do with the Russian energy industry in terms of pipelines. It was a big deal about who's getting rights over some pipelines. Do you remember that?
I do.
So I'm just putting that in there, and I don't know if they were coming down from Kazakhstan,
Well, the question is who's getting fucked here?
Well, that's the whole, that was.
Is it the European refiners?
Because that's a lot of everywhere. Man, that's a big. I hate to be Joe Biden, but that's a big fucking deal. Seriously.
You're not fucking
with people's machinery.
I haven't seen it anywhere in the multimillionaire for-profit media. Nowhere.
See, that's because it's too big. You know, that's one of those. You know, sometimes the biggest stories show up for like a day and they just disappear. And it can be the biggest, had the most implications of anything, and it just disappears. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
That could, like you said, who owns that company? See, that's the, ooh, man. I want to know that. Good grief. I want to know that. That's a big deal, man. That's as big as that phone call between the president and Putin for between 60 and 90 minutes, depending on who you believe.
Yeah, in this case, I believe the people who took the call and turned the clock on. 90 minutes.
Okay, well, that's worse than I thought. I was trying to be really open-minded about that. What is it going to take? What's it going to take? This is unbelievable. So there's so much. That's a whole program that we don't know.
What if it's a test to find out how easily Russia could use its oil exports to cut off and cripple Europe?
Easily. Easily. How easily? Oh, jack up the price. The Saudis. Who would benefit from that? The Saudis would, right?
Well, you always have to ask that question, don't you?
Well, cui bono. You know, who's motivated? What, you know, organisms operate by motivation, you know, most of the time. So, I hate to break it down like that. But so who's motivated, you know? And see, this whole thing is murky and irky. And speaking of the Persian Gulf, now, but this story, I want to dig into that. That is really intriguing. Who owns that? We got my mind ticking with that one. That's crazy. But okay, so
you'll find it over at Reuters if you want to go and find the story. I mean. The headline I have here, how Russia contaminated $2.7 billion in oil exports to Europe. I wonder if this was a big deal in the European press.
I don't know, but when you look at the nexus between how our president and his administration are, doesn't matter if you believe in Russian collusion or not, we're now operating in what Russia would prefer in terms of our geopolitical positions. And that just, there's no way around, I mean, as far as I see it, there's no way around that. That's just the way it looks. That's the way it appears. That's the way it is. Do you disagree or agree with me?
No. Like I said a little bit ago, this is their model.
This is their model. And so this is what I hate to say it like that, our president has adopted.
The problem is that if you've got that model and you really lock down control tight,
mm-hmm.
You can hang on to power. But if there's any kind of a soft spot, it can lead to results that you don't even really want to think about.
Somebody's going to get really pissed off. Exactly. If it blows up.
It's harder to do that Russian-style kleptocracy thing here because there are still elements of our nation that is an open society.
Absolutely. And even if you want to look at it in a mercenary way, there's too many hands in the pot. Like, you have to grease everybody's palm. Everybody. It's not just a few handful of oligarchs. You're going to have to take care of everybody, and I don't think that's going to happen. This is insane. So, all right, so, and at the same time, right, who has the most oil in our hemisphere? Who are we trying to overtake right now? Venezuela. The United States, you know, we have a covert war there, you know. You know what, I firmly believe, you remember Stuxnet, right? I think it's not too far-fetched. Remember, they were having power outages unwanted before the election. So I think, you know how we do it in the Southern Hemisphere, man. We try to dismantle those governments. If they turn socialist, come on, we remember the country.
Yeah, you can't have them operating for the good of the poor, but yeah.
No, exactly. They don't want free stuff here. You know, stop it down there. They don't want dental care and health care. You know, it's a mess. So we're headed over to the Gulf, right? Just in time.
Well, no, don't fall for that. This, like I said, this was planned for months.
Mm-hmm.
This was a planned deployment.
Yeah, I have to say that.
But they decided
to
get
back
some.
To Bolton. They wanted. To
they
Bolton
decided
too.
To get
they
some PR value of it, out of it by saber rattling at Iran, and again, we have to understand in a kleptocracy, they play to an audience of one.
What was John McCain's favorite line?
Bomb, 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 Iran.
There you go. Boom. So this is nothing new. We got the old watch. You know what? This is like the presidency and our government is like the NFL, and now we're drafting people from junior high in the JV, and they're in our administration. That's what the fuck we're dealing with.
So you know, I think we probably are. I mean, we're not going to saber rattle at Iran, but making a big deal out of the Abraham Lincoln task force going over there, carrier group, whatever we call them, mm-hmm. It serves a couple of purposes. It makes the maggots think that Trump is a BSD.
Mm-hmm.
And it also serves to mollify, it makes it look like we're really going to hold Iran's feet to the fire over their support for Hamas. Because, see, and this is another one of the dirty little secrets, Israel's a paper tiger, too.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when they went into Lebanon and got their asses kicked?
Oh, they were pissed. They came crying to us. Yeah.
And they really, you know, they can shoot Palestinians all day long and twice on Sunday. But it's not solving their problem.
They can't do it on Saturday.
It's not solving their problem. And more and more, the world is looking at them and understanding that Israel's right-wing government has gone full-on fascist. And you know what? You can say that, and you're still not an anti-Semite, by the way.
Thank God.
But I mean, that's what people keep returning to run the country, because they have been turned into a fearocracy. A country that is constantly in fear can be made to do anything that the cynical people running it want them to do. And Bibi Netanyahu is nothing if not cynical. So sending that carrier task force over there makes it look like we're sticking up for baby brother.
Right.
And it makes it look like we're being tough with Iran. And while John Bolton would like to get his war on, I stand by what I said earlier. He might want to lob a couple of billion dollars worth of Tomahawk cruise missiles at Iran, but we can't put boots on the ground there.
No, but this is what I fear, Bob, and this dovetails on what we talked about last time, the mechanism in which. All right, and I'm going to build on what, because I tested Tracy today. I didn't talk to her, but that story was frightening. It was fucking chilling. Two more years, I saw that shit in the Hill. I could not believe it. Graham. I was like, what? Are you sitting, like, if you feel like at that, you know, that's something you talk about at home among your peers. Two more years. Where, like you said, where is that coming from? That's not constitutional. It's nothing. So this is what
I'm
saying.
You had to. It's like what made Scott sort of go, huh, what? You have to take it in the context in which it was said, and it starts with Jerry Falwell Jr., and he didn't call them reparations for no reason at all. That was him sticking his fat, sausage-like white finger in the eye of every African-American in this country.
I said Graham, thank you. Yeah, Falwell. Right, yeah. Well, that's who he is. That's what these people are. That's what these people are.
And understand from that, and again, I am nonviolent, I am pro peace. But there is a faction within the Trump gang that perceives that they benefit when more people get shot at. I mean, Jesus Christ, these little things that just happen along the way and we go, oh, yeah, that's him. You know, the NFL draft happened a week or so ago. He tweeted out congratulations to the guy who got drafted second overall and had a history of tweeting racist shit and ignores Kyler Murray, who gets drafted number one and just happens to be, you know, black.
That's who he is.
Did you catch that one?
Yeah, that's who he is.
And see, it doesn't matter to you and me. I mean, we know he is what he is. But what we don't have, Todd, is an ability to understand the cumulative emotional, psychosocial impact that those little microaggressions, those little micro racisms have on the maggots, because it has far more energizing effect on them, whereas we just look at it and go, Jesus Christ, he's such a fucking racist.
Exactly. And let me build on what you're saying really quick. Now, and this is what I was very disgusted with a lot of things about our attorney general. But when he got into the psychological aggrieved mental state of the president, do you remember that? He was like, oh, and he's so aggrieved because he's been investigated and he should just, that had no place. What the fuck was he doing talking about that?
Well, if he's that much of a snowflake, maybe he'd better resign.
Thank you. Snowflake. Irony. Right. You see, okay. But you see, and I agree with you.
And see, building that trope that he was falsely accused.
Right.
Wasn't accused of shit.
Look, this is why I said we're in a coup, and we may as well get our little fascist khaki suits, because if you remember, like on the continent, when the Europeans evacuated, you know, many of the black Africans just adopted the corrupt, insane policies of the European conquerors. You see, they just fell into that corruption mode, you know, with the oopalettes on the shoulders and all that. So, I mean, that's where we are now. That's who we are. We, you know, we can wish we weren't, but that's where we are. And like you have been saying, damn it, we are in every damn day right now, every minute, every day, we're in CC. Constitutional crisis, period. I don't see how we're not. And you saw how many, look, that's incredible. All those attorneys, I mean, prominent federal attorneys. Yes, there was obstruction. Yes. I mean, it was so obvious. There was not only that, it's a pattern of obstruction, but I don't want to get sidetracked on that, because this is really sad. What I'm concerned about with the group of Navy ships that we can't even sail anymore because we crash into each other anymore lately, is that, and I'm not trying to give them ideas, but you see, he can't afford to have an election. And all he has to do is send one missile. It could be in a dead zone. It could be anywhere. And then they'll say, oh, my God, the Muslims over here, they're going to attack us because we had to attack them because of such and such. And that's that. I mean, he's already declared a national emergency over nothing, made out of whole cloth. whole cloth. So if there's actually something, a half of something that he manufactures, you know, and that's too easy to do. And like you said, Guffa talking.
Right.
This is what I fear. And this is the crew to do it. You see? These are the plumbers. Well, they're not stealing, but they're, you know.
These are the ones who get away with it.
They get away with it. They're the old pros. And another thing you said, you see, remember, the people of a certain age, those old people older than us, that clicks in their brain like, oh, we had carriers going to the Persian Gulf. You know, that's going to click in their brain a little bit, don't you think? They see that shit on Fox News. Fox News is dangerous, man. And even, you know, what the fuck? Let me ask you something. How in the hell was it appropriate? And you know me, I'm very opinionated. I'll be honest with you. I'm opinionated as fuck because I'm a black man and I've been in the circles where you're the only black person in the goddamn building. Not in the room, in the fucking building, in the whole laboratory. You know, where you got to swipe in and like, there's nobody around but damn animals and that's it. And the principal investigator and, you know, and me, like, you know, research assistant. There's nobody around there black. And these motherfuckers talk shit. They talk a lot of shit. And they believe in eugenics. And they do shit that you don't even see. And I know that. I've been there. There's shit that goes on that you do not see. And nobody ever see it. It's behind layers of protection. So shit does happen. Things happen. We're in trouble. What have you to say?
I think we're in more trouble than we know. Because, okay, you're not, I'm not, because we know how bad it is because we've been paying attention. But it's gonna come as a horrible shock. I mean, look, the story that began, the breaking news that began the program, where Mnuchin just tells the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee to fuck himself, and declares that that his request for Trump's taxes lacks a legitimate legislative purpose. Who the fuck is Steve Mnuchin to make that determination? Okay? But
no one.
Right, he's precisely nobody. But he gets away with it. I mean, do you remember, L.A. Confidential?
Mm-hmm. The book and the movie. Elmore Leonard.
Yeah, this is going to be a spoiler for people who haven't seen the movie. Mm-hmm. We are in. What's the character's name that, you know, his dad always told you? He used that name to mean the guy who always gets away with it.
Don't be like him. Well, or be like him. Yeah. I don't recall his name.
If Agnes, if Agnes was listening, she'd know. But it's it's a corrupt. You know, the guy's corrupt and he gets away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're there. And Steve Mnuchin can just say, "Yeah, fuck off." And we're not far from him actually saying that instead of just saying, it lacks a legitimate legislative purpose. Fuck you, buddy. Fuck you. But here's the thing, the reporting on it. Yeah, Rollo Tomasi. Thank you, Scott in San Diego. Rollo Tomasi.
Oh, boy.
The guy who always gets away with it.
Hi, Scott.
I knew somebody'd have it. But here's the thing. The multimillionaire for-profit media reports it, and I mean, I had the story. I was reading straight from the text, which sets up a legal challenge. Well, I guess that's true as far as it goes, but it's only a legal challenge if the game isn't already fixed, Todd. And so in the case, like I said, explaining to Scott, in the case of contempt of Congress... And they're going to wind up holding the entire administration in contempt. And every one of those contempt citations goes to another guy who's been held in contempt who says, I don't care any more about that than I did the other ones.
That's why it's a coup.
Fuck all of y'all.
People are in the key position.
And there is no going back. And I stand by my definition of a constitutional crisis. A constitutional crisis occurs when things, when events transpire for which there are no tools in the Constitution or the system of laws to remedy them. And we're there.
They have gamed the system. We have been talking about, like, what could happen. We kept saying, what could happen? No, it won't, because it's just too crazy. It's just, but every, like Scott used the right phrase, every safety valve has failed, including the Electoral College, because remember, they were the ones who were supposed to say, this guy's not fit. It doesn't matter. Nah, we can't have you. You know, they didn't do it. But like you said, how mold up are we? This whole thing stinks. This we have to really, really pay attention to what the hell is going on. Is the DNC eaten up? Why do we have so many people? So much confusion.
Hold on. Because that's something I kind of meant to get into again, and I'll probably piss people off. I'm getting so sick of the "we've been let down by Nancy Pelosi" horse shit.
No.
Nancy Pelosi over the weekend said Donald Trump isn't going to leave office peacefully unless we just beat the shit out of him. And she's right.
She knows what the hell she's talking about.
And so, if you look out on social media, you got all these geniuses who, they know so much more about being Speaker of the House than Nancy Pelosi, and goddammit, she's going to impeach him now, motherfucker.
You got pushback.
But
I've been following your Twitter feed. I guess you got pushback. Okay.
She's got the job because she's good at the job. And it's funny that all these, goddamn Nancy Pelosi, DNC, Deborah Wasserman, Schultz, neoliberal establishment, shill, goddamn, none of those people ever say shit about Mitch McConnell, or for that matter, about Chuck Schumer. And all the goddamn deals Chuck Schumer's cut that have put 100 federal fucking judges, Trumpansies, Federalist Society wet dreams on the bench.
I'll let some sail through. He let some judges sail through. I think, what was it, before Easter or Thanksgiving?
Yeah, nobody, there might be a little bit here and there. Goddamn neoliberal establishment shill. But it's the woman they go after. Well, and that is not lost on me.
I should tell you something. That's why it's not the time for to have a female president right now. Our baser selves have been awoken. Awakened. We need someone to win. You see, and I hate to say it has to be an old.
And we need somebody. Remember the name of Mitch McConnell's memoir.
Fuck Mitch McConnell.
No. Remember the name of the memoir, Todd.
What?
The Long Game.
Oh, shit. That's true. Yep.
And
yep.
She's playing it, too, and she's probably better than him at it.
He's pissed because she came back on the stage. No. That's what we need. She knows the parliamentary procedure. She knows how to handle this shit.
If we can just get the geniuses of the Purity Patrol to breathe into a brown paper bag for a little bit, we might wind up going where we want to go.
Bob, I don't know what type of ship we're on, but these are some rough waters.
We're in a rowboat on a sea of gasoline and sitting there flipping matches at each other.
I don't, we used to joke about this is not going to end nicely either way, but but wait a minute. What about Florida? These people are all in on machines now. They won't even tell you what county got flipped. See, so that meme about, they didn't really flip any votes. Well, yeah, they did.
Yeah, they may have. Goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultz. But we've got it. We got to be smarter than this. We got to be better than this. Here's another piece of news that didn't get out today.
I hope it's as good as that last story, man.
No, I know we're only supposed to pay attention to Bernie and Biden, maybe, and Beto and sort of Kamala. Mm-hmm. Well, again, I'm not falling in love with anybody, but a Democratic presidential candidate did something today that was more substantial than any other candidate has done on the topic yet. And it happens to be a presidential candidate who has both congressional experience and experience as a state's chief executive, and not some and you know, not the governor of goddamn Texas. Okay, this is a politician who has real experience running a successful, wealthy state.
Okay, I think I know who you're talking about.
Go ahead. So, lo and behold, Governor Jay Inslee of Washington, and I'm sure that he is far from being anywhere near ideologically pure enough, Todd.
No, he's, no.
I mean, for all I know, he's a neoliberal establishment shill. All I'll have to do is check Twitter and find out. But he released the most comprehensive climate change policy of any Democrat running thus far. And he's deadly serious about it because he says, you know, I'm not going to get in Trump's name game. I'm going to talk about climate change, because climate change is more dangerous to us as a nation and as a species than any other thing we're talking about. And he's absolutely right.
Did you hear what he said about making clean cars?
Yeah.
And that would create a lot of jobs, honestly.
And the thing is, his time frame, as opposed to 2050 or 2072, his time frame aligns with the time frame that was put out by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change last fall. 11 years. And he says, what we're going to do, we're going to do in 11 years. And so he, in the next 11 years, he wants 100% zero emission new vehicles, 100% zero carbon new buildings, 100% carbon neutral electricity. And it's all encompassed in his 100% clean energy for America plan. And the dude hasn't even raised enough money to get into a goddamn debate.
That's fucked up. You know, 11 years. That's right tied up against the time frame that was given to us recently. Like, if we have 10 years to do something more than we're doing now. Otherwise, I think it's too late. Honestly, I think it's too late. But
we gotta try. It's too late to make it go back to something that resembles anything we've known before. There's no getting around that. But it is not too late to save the species' ability to continue to survive on the planet. And that's what we're shooting for now.
Oh, boy.
And so he's actually trying to talk about, you know, a 100% clean electricity standard. All light and medium-duty vehicles and buses, zero emissions by 2030.
That's great. We've already started with that. There are.
Yeah. So why is this guy? Why is this guy at like 0.8%?
Corporate.
Is it because he's not checking the right boxes?
He's got a
better environmental record than Joe Biden will ever have. And I'm not gooning on Biden. He's got more experience dealing with this than Bernie will ever have.
Mm-hmm.
He's been something besides a member of a debating society like Kamala and Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar and Kirsten Gillibrand, because that's all the Senate is a debating society.
I've been hearing him, and he has a very cogent and a tight message. Like, it's not like theory. You know, like, I don't even know what the hell, I'll be honest with you, I don't know what Beto O'Rourke is talking. I mean, he just jumps around.
I'm not gooning on any of them. They all have talents that would make them a better president than Donald Trump in a billion years of actual trying to be a better president would ever achieve.
I have a worm in the ground out there, and that would be a better president, but that's, you know. Whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, I get that, you know. One of those deer ticks that carries Lyme disease would be a better president than Donald Trump. I recognize it's a low bar, but I don't want to be I don't want to be perceived as attacking any candidate. I'm not.
You're not. Right?
What I'm asking is why
I'm not backing anybody either. Right?
Why is this guy? Why is this guy who is trying to answer the seminal existential question of our age? Why is he not getting the coverage? And it's because, and it's because, once again, just like 2016, Trump's sucking all the energy out of the room, because every morning you get up and you have to be subjected to talking about the latest outrageous, ignorant, dirt, dumb, goddamn, mean-spirited piece of shit thing that Donald Trump said.
Okay, so what was your favorite tidbit this morning? Well, you know what?
I wasn't really engaged. I about half paid attention. But I always enjoy it when Joe goes off on one of his, and me, a Republican, rants.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of cute that he went down the road of saying, well, I'd love to run for president, blah, 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 blah. Oh, would you, Joe? I'll bet you would.
You know, I often think, like, before they got married, I wonder if the salary thing got in the way. Like, how did that work out? I'm just saying, you know what I mean? There's a lot going on there. But, man, look, but what you said about Inslee is very interesting, because, you know, a lot of other folks, they don't have a cogent message. That he does have a cogent message about that. But what intrigued me is that what is going on with, I'll be honest with you, when I was growing up, the only time you heard the word existential was in philosophy class. Like, if you said existential, it meant that you needed to basically, like, slow down, stop, and pay attention. It was very, very important. Now, people just use this word like they chew bubble gum now. And I'm just not cool with that. Maybe it's me. Am I worse now?
No. I think people are. I think people are coming to understand the meaning of the word. I think it's the exact opposite of the word neoliberal, where anytime, you know, if you stubbed your toe, you yelled, "Goddamn neoliberals!" It's not that. It's the fact that the word existential is rooted in existence, and it's easy to get your head around. This way, we don't exist anymore. This way, we got a fighting chance.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is a type of word, like, you can't say, well, I love, you can't say I love you to every woman you meet, and then it doesn't mean anything. You see, it devalues it.
Right.
I think the word is being devalued, because there are some things, you know, nuclear war is an existential threat. You know, climate change, existential. You know, some other things, maybe not so much, but I don't know. But you know, speaking of words.
Yeah, what happens next week on Game of Thrones is not existential, nor is the screw up where somebody left a Starbucks cup in the episode last night.
You're going to piss somebody off. You're going to piss somebody off tonight with that, man. People take that seriously.
Oh, and by the way, Tracy knew it was Rollo Tomasi, too, so.
Wow, I'm out of the loop. Okay.
Time to go and rewatch. Hey, Todd, I'm going to roll out of here. We're over time, buddy.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Thanks a ton, man. Later.
Okay.
Bye. That's our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. And by the way, I need to send thank yous out to our dear friend Jude in the Great Northwest. We were at 290, and she took us down to 240. So there's only $40 to do catching up with last week, and then we'll start working on this week, okay? So
hopefully maybe some of that happens overnight. I don't know. Thanks to all of our subscribers. Thanks, thanks Henry, and thanks, Joy, and thanks, Jude, for jumping in this evening. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve from Georgistan in the chat room this evening. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.